Morning TNC family on this fourth Sunday in July. I want to jump right in today and start in Genesis chapter 1 and 2 with a phrase that the writer of Genesis sets up very carefully and very cleverly, a phrase that the writer expects for us to notice. Genesis chapter 1, it's from the creation story, where there's a phrase pattern that occurs over and over and over. Verse 4, 10, 12, 18, 21, and 25. And the phrase pattern is, "And God said, and it was so, and God saw that it was good." And God said, "Let there be light," and it was so, and God saw that it was good. And God said, "Let the dry ground appear," and it was so, and God saw that it was good. And God said, "Let there be living things," and it was so, and God saw that it was good. And if you think about like the music you listen to on Spotify or iTunes or the radio that has different verses but a repeating chorus, then you will understand that this phrase pattern of Genesis 1, God said, and it was so, and God saw that it was good, could be called the chorus of the creation song. Six verses, same chorus. The song of creation, that everything which exists is the loving and thoughtful ordering activity of an indescribably good and wise God. God said, and it was so, and God saw that it was good until the final act of creation, at which point the song is alarmingly interrupted. If you've ever played music on those old vinyl record players with the needle in the grooves, this is the point when the arm and the needle scratch across the record and the music comes to a screeching halt. Because in the final act of creation, God creates a human in his own image. And God looks at this human who bears his likeness. And God says, chapter 2, verse 18, "It is not good for the man to be alone." It is good, it is good, it is good, it is good, it is not good. And the writer is making an intentional point about the fundamental value that God places on human relationships. So just think about this for a moment. The fall of Genesis chapter 3 has not yet occurred. There's no sin, no separation, no disobedience. Nothing strains the relationship between God and Adam. In fact, Adam is in a state of wonderful intimacy with God. They talk together and walk together. They experience joy and curiosity and wonder. Adam is known and loved to the core of his being by an omniscient, love-filled creator. And yet, the word God uses to describe him is alone. And the phrase that God uses to evaluate that aloneness is not good. A rather surprising yet powerful observation from the story about the importance of human connection, human relationships, and about the design and intention for human flourishing, which is TNC. Your health, happiness, peace, and progress depend on your human connections. And now I'm going to make the case that healthy relationships are the most powerful force by far that you can cultivate in order to reduce worry, boredom, distraction, and depression, and increase joy, meaning, success, health, peace, and optimism, which reminds me again of clinical psychologist and best-selling author Henry Cloud's phenomenal book called The Power of the Other, The Startling Effect Other People Have on You, where he asks the question, how do you surpass your current limits and your current realities? How do you become better? How do you become more? And he looks at this from psychology and biology and sociology and from over 40 years of working with individuals. What makes the human mind and body and will push beyond limits to greater realities? Answer: make room for the right relationships, and you will expand your opportunity for the right results. Which is very similar to a point that Emily Esfahani Smith has famously made, first in her TED Talk and then in her best-selling book, The Power of Meaning. Esfahani Smith is a journalist and a professor of psychology who spent 5 years interviewing hundreds of people and reading thousands of pages of psychology and neuroscience and philosophy surrounding one question: what makes people truly happy? And what Esfahani Smith discovered was that the good life, the satisfying life, the connected and significant life comes from the power of meaning, the meaningful life, which rests on 4 pillars. The first pillar, which is belonging, human connections. She says, you will not and cannot have a meaningful life outside of connections. Which leads me to some of the work of Edward Hallowell, a psychiatrist, author, and senior lecturer at Harvard Medical School, who writes that for most people, the 2 most powerful experiences in life are achieving and connecting. And Hallowell says that the problem is our society is increasingly devoted to and obsessed with achieving, which is apparent by things like the dissolution of families and why we'll leave friendships to move across country in pursuit of money or a preferred climate, and why we'll cheat and step on other people in order to win, and why we don't even know the names of most of our neighbors. And while achieving is a good thing, he says, when it's done in the right way for the right reasons, it is no substitute for what he calls the human moment. The moment when 2 or more people are together, truly paying attention to one another, sharing something together, working on a project together, serving together, laughing together, celebrating together, grieving together, truly connecting, the human moment. It's what we crave and what we most fundamentally need. And the human moment, he says, not achieving, but the human moment, is what is most responsible for happy families, successful businesses, inner peace, physical health, and even longevity. Which, of course, is backed by that super famous Blue Zone research. Blue Zones, some of you know, are regions of the world with a statistically significant, higher than usual number of people who live much longer than average. This discovery was made famously by Giovanni Pess, Michael Polian, and Dan Buettner, who identified 5 Blue Zones across the world: Okinawa, Japan, Sardinia, Italy, Nicoya, Costa Rica, Ikara, Greece, and Loma Linda, California. And what accounts for these blue zones of longevity? Well, among the discoveries were, yes, patterns of diet, physical activity, rest, spirituality, but also healthier than average social connections, the human connection, because you and I, from the very beginning, were created and designed for the human moment. Relational connectedness. And to miss out on this is to miss out on the reason why God made you. Listen, TNC, whatever else you achieve, whatever else you accomplish, however much stuff you pile up, however high you climb on any ladder, if you miss connection, the human moment, then you miss the reason why you were made. Which leads me to what I want to share today for a few minutes, which is simply the 3 words of the human moment. The 3 words of connection. 3 words to know and live if you want better, healthier relationships, if you want to grow closer to folks and be more connected and more at peace and more encouraged. And the first word of human connection, number one is the word see, S-E-E. A while ago, I was listening to a podcast, a conversation actually, about Søren Kierkegaard, the great 19th century Danish existentialist. Some of you know Kierkegaard was a prolific writer who wrote a lot about love and living and theology. And among what he writes in his discourses, he says, quote, "A good existence does not depend merely upon what one sees, but what one sees depends on how one sees." Now, what does he mean? Well, Irish philosopher Peter Rollins explains it this way. Have you ever noticed how a cow looks at a car? So imagine now, like you're on a road trip, and you're driving slowly along a two-lane country road with fields on either side, and as you come to a four-way stop, a cow, chewing its cud, looks up, sees you, but there's nothing really going on inside. It just glances up and then goes back to chewing grass. Cows looking at cars, that's a picture of how we treat people in life, Rollins says. You go to a store, and there's almost this gray, bland existence, and you just want to get into the shortest line, and you keep talking on the phone while the person checks you out, and you drive down the road, and your car is really the only one that matters, and you get your oil changed, and the mechanic is sort of like just another piece of equipment, and you call your cable provider, and the person on the other end of the line is just a roadblock to a result. Reminds you of this story of the Good Samaritan that Jesus tells, Luke chapter 10. Jesus makes this point. In the story, there's a guy in desperate need, and the first person to see, but not really see, is a priest, a cow, looking at a car. Because the priest sees, but he does not really see. He just sees like a spill on aisle 11. Just take your shopping cart and go around. I mean, the spill is there, but it's not really my concern. And you don't even feel guilty or prompted to do anything because it's not your problem. And the second person in Jesus' story, the Levite, is also a cow looking at a car because he too sees but doesn't really see. Read the text. He looks up but figures it's not really his business or job or concern. That's a Ukrainian problem. That's an inner city problem. That's an on the border problem. That's a future generation problem. That's a Hollywood problem. That's a you problem. But TNC, when you love somebody, you will see them. And in that way, love does not exist. Rather, it is what calls everything into existence. In other words, because you can't see love, like put love in a petri dish under a microscope, but love is what allows you to see. It is what turns a void into an individual, a cog in a wheel into an invaluable creation of our Creator God. I came across a story some time ago of a woman who wanted to take a train that was set to depart in 20 minutes. And she had left her wallet at home but found some cash in the bottom of her purse. And so she purchased her ticket with the last of her cash, went through the turnstile, and as she got ready to board, a big tall conductor was standing there. "Ticket, please." At which point she realizes she has somehow dropped her ticket. And she gets nervous and says, I dropped my ticket, and he could see that she was rambling, and he looked at her and said, "It's okay, ma'am, don't worry about it." And since the train had yet to depart for another several minutes, they stood there and talked for a few minutes, about the weather and then their children and then their parents and where they grew up, and they laughed. And then he moved on to actually start the train. He was the conductor. And at the very end of the trip, as she was getting off the train, she saw the conductor and came up to him and said, "Look, I really appreciate that you let me on. I'm sorry I dropped my ticket." And he said, "It's totally okay. You know, it's just nice to be seen once in a while." Now, think about it. He was seen by thousands of people every day, but merely as someone who's part of a system, a one-dimensional man who helps the world run. But that day, in that moment, he felt that she had seen him, and the result was a connection, a human connection. Because TNC, we all want to be more than just a face, or a label, or a demographic, or a stereotype, or a generalization. We want to be known, and we want to be noticed. This is what love does. This is why love does not exist, but it is rather what calls everything into existence. Neil Clark Warren, who has authored many books on relationships, and, for better or worse, is the founder of eHarmony, he has something he calls the 3 rules of relationships. It's a play on that famous 3 rules of real estate. You know the 3 rules of real estate, right? Location, location, location. Well, he has the 3 laws of relationships, which are observation, observation, observation. He says if you want to connect with somebody and deepen a relationship with them, begin by noticing them, observing them. See how their face and body responds to things. Take in what moves them and matters to them. Appreciate what makes them unique, what God sees in them, what God has placed in them. Because the first word of human connection, number 1, is see. You will never experience the human moment of connection if you don't become an expert in observation. Which leads us to the second word of the human moment. Number 2 is the word ask. Because if you see something, if you notice something or someone and don't ask in response to what you notice, then it'll just die in the observation, or maybe you'll get it wrong, because sometimes we see wrong. So when you notice something or somebody, then in the appropriate way, time and context, ask. Which might mean you simply engage with a, "Hi, how you doing?" Or, "Hey, I just want to thank you for something I saw you do to serve or add beauty or make a difference," which will then open up a dialogue, a connection. Or, "Hey, are you okay? Is there something I can do to help?" Or, again, in the right context, as a way to open dialogue, "So, what happened today that was fun or funny or challenging or stressful or exciting?" Now, there's an awesome story about this see and then ask sequence in Genesis chapter 40 in the scriptures, part of the story of a man named Joseph. Earlier in Genesis, before chapter 40, when we first see Joseph, he's having dreams about himself. His own dreams are all he can focus on. He just cares about himself. And he has a dream, and in the dream he becomes a leader ruling over his other brothers. And he tells his brothers the dream. Not a real smart move. And the text says they hated him for it, and they could not speak a kind word to him. And you think maybe Joseph would notice this and care about it and try to repair the relationship with his brothers, but he doesn't. Instead, he has another dream, again a dream about himself and for his own life, and this one involves the sun and the moon and the stars, and once again, he is the superstar of the dream, And once again, he tells his brothers the dream, and it goes from bad to worse because one day they kidnap Joseph and sell him into slavery in Egypt, where things are very hard for Joseph, and he struggles. But of course, there is strength in the struggle, as is often the case, and God is with Joseph, and Joseph does well, gets kind of high up in the palace, but then is betrayed and ends up in prison, Pharaoh's prison, and he is in prison alongside two other government officials, a butler and a baker. And now, chapter 40, verses 6 and 7, Joseph and the butler and baker are in the same prison. Verse 6, when Joseph came to them the next morning, he saw that they were dejected. So he asked Pharaoh's officials, who were in prison with him, "Why do you look so sad today?" Now, do you see it, TNC? This represents a huge transformation inside of Joseph. He sees another person's situation, not just his own, and he asks them about it. Joseph saw, and then Joseph asks, and you can read the whole story later, but just know this. When he does this, a connection is formed. When he is focused on his own dreams, he can't see someone else's dreams. He can't see his brother's dreams and his brother's hopes and his brother's pain. But when he is focused on someone else's dreams, not only is there a connection, but he helps their dreams come true and his dreams come true. Because relationships always get restored and connection is created when we first see others and then ask, engage. And for Joseph, it all begins when he sees and asks. These are the first two words of the human moment. Which leads to the final word of human connection, number 3. The third word of human connection is serve. First see, then ask, and finally serve. Because Joseph sees and then asks, and then the butler and baker tell him their dreams, and so he helps them, he responds, he serves, which ends up helping Joseph later get out of prison and then rise to second in power, a position from which he helps all of Egypt and then all the surrounding people, including allowing him to connect again with his father and brothers and family. Now back to the research and work of Emily Esfahani Smith, who says that too often in seeking connection with people, our first move is to think about how we can be served. We think about where we have a need and how someone can fill our need, which is in fact important because we have to feel valued in order to experience the human moment. But Esfahani Smith says, in order for connection and belonging to be experienced fully, it is not just enough for you to be served. Equally important, she says, is that you are bringing value to others, which is why some groups deliver a very cheap form of belonging. Like you can belong to a gym, but have no sense of belonging. Or you can belong to the fan club of a favorite musician or Twitter star, click here to follow, but have no sense of belonging to that group. You can belong to a small group, but have no sense of belonging. You can belong to a family, but have little sense of belonging. You can belong to a church, but have little sense of belonging. Because belonging requires not only that you are being served and valued, but also that you are bringing service and value. Esfahani Smith says, if you want to pursue belonging, the human connection, the human moment, then you can't just think, what can I join where others will make me feel like I belong? If you want to feel belonging, she says, and now I'm paraphrasing, be as interested in remembering another's birthday as you are in having them remember yours. Be as interested in remembering another's name as you are in having someone remember your name. Be as interested in encouraging others as you are in being encouraged. Be as interested in bringing food to that event, that group, as you are in coming to the event and group and enjoying the food. Be as interested in giving money as you are in experiencing the fruits of others who give money. Now, this is really important. Often I hear people express frustration with their lack of connections in life, and often they express their frustrations in terms of what others are not doing, but they're missing the key step, which is in connection, the most important thing isn't what others do, it's what you are doing. It's will you see, and will you ask, and then will you serve? Because if you see, and then ask, and then serve, you're setting yourself up for the human connection, the very thing you were created to enjoy and experience. Because when you connect, then you're at the heart of your created intent. For God said, I've made you for human connection. And TNC, it is so. And I pray that we will see and experience how deeply good it is. Let's pray. God, I pray now for every person listening. And I pray for their connections. For their connections with partners at work and at home. Their connections with children and grandchildren and parents and grandparents. I pray for their connections in neighborhoods and in school systems and in cities. God, I pray that you would help us to see well and to ask well and to serve well in all the paths of life that you put in front of us. And now, TNC, may the Lord bless you and keep you. Make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. May the Lord turn his face toward you and give you peace. Amen.